Hey Liverpool fans, have you seen the latest release? At Anfield Index, we've teamed up with Liverpool FC to announce that the brand new 24-25 LFC Nike home kit and anthem jacket are out now, and they're hotter than ever. The brand new kit pays homage to the legendary Rome 1984 side, featuring sleek pinstripe detailing that brings a touch of history to our modern game. Whether you're cheering from the cop or watching from home, you'll feel the spirit of the Reds coursing through every stitch. The best part? You can grab yours today. The new kit and training range are available in official stores, online, and through the LFC store app. Don't wait, order now and be ready to show your Liverpool pride and style. Get your hands on the new 24-25 LFC home kit and anthem jacket today. Let's make this season unforgettable. You'll never walk alone.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Liverpool in Focus. One topic, one guest, every week. Hello, it's John Buskell here from Stockholm, Sweden, talking to you from the Doghouse Studio, as I like to call it, with my Basset Hounds under my desk as I record the show. Today on In Focus, episode 37, I've got Alan O'Donoghue on. And Alan and I, we're having a discussion about Benitez in Europe. It seems to me that we're on another journey with Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool Football Club in Europe this season, on the back of a fantastic performance against Hoffenheim the other night. I thought it would be interesting to go back and look at Benitez's record in Europe, and through Benitez's experiences in Europe, through that prism, look again a bit at where we are at with Klopp going into this season. So, Alan, I'm curious. When we won in Istanbul, was it Hulier's side that did it? Was it Hulier's Liverpool, or was it Benitez's Liverpool that won in Istanbul?
I'm going to give you the sit on the fence answer, John.
Perfect.
It was both. I think, you know, when we initially kind of touched a base about having this discussion, you know, it was, you know, how much of it was down to tactics and personnel and whether it was a poor squad that Benitez had inherited. But it actually wasn't. When I looked back at the squad list, there was actually quite a strong spine. You know, Hupia was there. Dudek was, he was a decent keeper. But, you know, you had Gerrard and, you know, there was a decent spine there. Haman was there. So I suppose the ones that really stand out when we think of the run in the Champions League are the ones who had been there. They hadn't been brought in by Benitez. But what he did was he brought in the players to complement that and what he did with, say, Jamie Carragher, where he took him to a whole new level, I think that was his input into it. Brought in with the tactics that he played throughout, which was to, you know, not concede and to build from, you know, a solid foundation. So it was a 50-50, in my opinion, anyway.
I know it's a tricky question. It's something that I've thought a lot about, because I was a Julio fan. I thought his sides played some great football, and I remember at the time being quite split when Julio left. I felt that in his final season, the performances hadn't been there. I thought it was too much taking the kind of rhetoric of it's a massive success finishing fourth, and then he gets the, well, you know, he goes by mutual consent, but it seems that he was let go. And then when Benitez comes in, I didn't know anything about Benitez, and I did some due diligence and went away and looked at what he'd done at Valencia, and I remembered his side coming to Anfield and really impressing, and that was the only thing that I'd known about Benitez. But I think from the get-go, And like you, I do think he inherited a good spine. I think from the get-go, what amazed me, what really impressed me about Benitez was the level of pragmatism in his managing. I loved the fact that he wasn't emotional. I think I'm a very emotional person. And I loved the fact that Benitez came in and he didn't seem to pander to anyone. He was razor sharp. Did you see at the time when Benitez came in that we had moved to a European mindset a tactical European mindset?
I think in Europe, definitely it looked different. Something looked different at the time. I think I didn't see a huge difference between himself and Julier's teams. Like you, I think Julier had come to a natural end in his management. And it's funny, when I look back at what Benitez had achieved, in my head with Valencia, it was, you know, phenomenal, phenomenal stuff. But actually, and I had forgotten about it, but that Valencia team before he took over had got into two Champions League finals previously, you know. So he had, now that's not to underplay his achievements in beating Madrid and Barcelona to the title twice, but at the same time, I think in one of his seasons where he won, Deportivo finished second. So, you know, he had, I think tactically he brought a new way of playing that was, I suppose, Spain was hitting its height as, you know, the quality of players were coming through. So he was able to bring that, those techniques and, I suppose, understanding and knowledge into the English game. And I think, you know, we all look at Arsene Wenger and when he first came in and what he did to basically change English football. And there was very few other managers around who could adapt to him, bar say Ferguson. But I think when Benitez came in, he brought a whole new way of thinking and working as a football unit. So it's almost like he took the baton off Wenger and brought it forward. But he also had a very good backroom team. Like, I don't think any Liverpool fan will ever underestimate the impact of Paco Estrahan on that team. And definitely when he left, there was a big gap. And, you know, you could see it within how Julia or how Benitez was managing. But when we look at the games and looking back at the Champions League run in 2004-2005, we weren't playing phenomenal football in the early rounds. Like, you know, we were very mediocre in the qualifier.
I know we only really scrape past Graz. You know, they come back to Anfield and they get the win.
Yeah, and we were like, I can still remember watching that game and going, how poor were we? I was thinking whoever we got in the group stages, I was thinking we could finish bottom with the way we were playing if that's the way we were going to carry on.
I know because I think with hindsight, looking back, there is the, and I want to call it a myth. I mean, it's not a myth because we were fantastic in Europe under Benitez. There is no discussion. What he achieved during his tenure was fantastic. We were, to coin the phrase, regularly dining at the top table, as it were. But early on, the group stages, you know, we lose to Olympiacos, at Olympiacos. We lose to Monaco in Monaco. There weren't great performances. It was almost touch and go until the final game against Olympiacos when we get the 3-1 victory. And who do you put the 3-1 victory down to?
Gerrard.
I mean, that's it. It's iconic, isn't it?
It is iconic. And it's funny, his goal is iconic, but his performance in that match was amazing. It really was one of the first times he really stood up and went, I am going to drag this team through this match if it's the last thing I do. Now, he's, you know, if you look at the supporting cast around him, you know, bar, it's kind of like a role reversal of where we are now, where attacking wise we were relatively weak, I would say, in the forwards and attacking players that we had, but defensively the structure that Benitez had in place was there to maximize the ability of the players that he had in defense. So I think, you know, we can't deny it. Jared dragged us through that game and got us into the next round.
I think Benitez, you know, he's spot on bringing on Cinema Pongol for Traore at half time. I do love a manager that will take the decision at half time to, you know, to junk someone completely. Okay, lad, off you come with changing tactics. And of course, you know, we see it in the final itself. A manager who is prepared to make a radical change. I think in the years after Benitez, that's one of the things that I've got frustrated with. For example, at the moment with Klopp, I absolutely hate Klopp's substitutions. It seems to come on 80 minutes, 84 minutes. He seems to weaken the side, throws on Joe Gomez, who makes an error, and bang, there's, you know, the free kick that brings in the draw. I think Benitez, in that, he showed an immense pragmatism. I agree. Jared drags us, you know, it's a wonderful man of the match performance. I also think that Neil Mellor plays a big role in that game. He plays with his heart, but I think a lot of credit goes to Benitez for daring to make that change, to, you know, put his neck on the line, to take off a defender, to put on another forward, because we had to get the three goals.
And I think, you know, it's one of those things that where it was the last throw of the dice, really, you know. And I wonder, had we got that third goal that we needed before the substitution, would he have just shut up shop, you know, and not made that? And that's the one thing you could say about Benitez, and especially in Europe, he was able to shut out matches and shore it all up. But, you know, when you look back at the substitutions he would make, the players that he would bring on, the attacking players, and the decisions to bring them on were really, really clever as well. And while Barras and Mellor and Cinema Pongol and Italic even, you know, they're never going to go down in folklore, LFC folklore, but what they all had was they worked hard, and that's what he needed in his, you know, striker. He needed them to literally put the defensive back four under significant pressure in order to allow the defensive setup to get in place that they could break very quickly.
I think that, I mean, Neil Mellor comes on for 10 minutes at the end, and, you know, as you said, you know, we've got Mellor, Pongol coming on as the subs, and here we are in 2017 collectively having a nervous breakdown because we haven't signed Virgil van Dijk or Naby Keita, you know, for, you know, 70, 80, 90 million euros, pounds, whatever, you know, it's all these astronomical sums being thrown away. And way back 2004, 2005, Benitez is bringing on Neil Mellor, a local lad, Cinema Pongol, who had impressed at the under 23 World Cup, to World Championships, or whatever it was that he and Letelic had shone on when Julio brought them in. And these lads help get the job done. I think when I look back, there is that immense sense of pragmatism in Benitez's approach in that season. He really shows his acumen in getting the most out of them. The performances against Bayer Leverkusen and Juventus, to get, particularly against Juventus, to get to the semi-finals was, you know, I thought that was absolutely fantastic, that he's able, you know, able to get the 2-1 at Anfield against Juventus, and then to go over to Italy, you know, what is it, 13th of April or something like that, around about, you know, the first couple of weeks of April, and play out a draw against Juventus to hold on. It was an absolutely fantastic performance. Benitez is a bit like a chess player.
That's exactly what he is. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think you've hit the nail on the head. The managers we've had since then have been very rigid in how they wanted the team to play and the style of play they wanted to use. And you need to have the adaptability. And I think the quarterfinal against Juventus, the two matches, highlighted Benitez's ability to play attacking football when he knew there was a second leg to come. Like, Liverpool in that first leg were excellent, absolutely excellent in how they played. They, you know, Juventus were a very, very, like, you look back at the team and they were so good. And Liverpool schooled them in that match as far as I was concerned. Now, there was obviously the nervousness because, you know, they did have the threats going forward with Trezeguet. But they had probably, Cannavaro was probably seen as the best centre-half or certainly one of the best centre-halves in the league. And we made them look, not average, but we put them under a lot of pressure. Then to go and completely flip it around and go to Turin and grind out a 0-0 against a team who were, you know, they had Ibrahimovic up front and they were trying to, you know, really, really push us. And we didn't really concede that many clear-cut chances. One or two, that was it. But, you know, that just showed the ability he had. And I think, you know, when you read about, when people speak about Benitez and his training methods and, you know, even in stuff from Paco himself, like the level of detail Benitez would go into around every single individual player, around strengths, weaknesses, fitness levels, everything. So he knew exactly, you know, Jamie Carragher is good at X, Y, and Z. Let's not ask him to do A, B, and C because it just puts us under pressure. And I think that's one of the issues that that we have with Klopp at the moment is that, you know, he wants his players to play a system instead of looking at, can this player actually play the system? So, you know, let's look at Dejan Lovren, for instance, briefly. You know, he gets crucified by Liverpool fans because he's rubbish. He's useless. He's no good. He's, you know, he's not even a mid-table defender. He's actually a decent defender. It's just the system we have set up does not play to his strengths. So whose fault is that? Is that his fault or is it the manager's fault for the system and for not getting the players in that do fit the system? Now, I believe Klopp's here for the long term, I hope, but you know, he's building something slowly from the ground up. It's a very different time, though. Whereas Benitez was very quick in terms of, you know, his obsession around looking at the players and their abilities and strengths, but also looking at their weaknesses, where they could fall down, and working around that. And that's what played out throughout that whole Champions League run.
Absolutely. I just have to say, I pulled up the team sheets. Just before we started recording the show, I pulled up the team sheets for the Juventus game, the game in Turin. Juventus, Buffon, Montero. Okay, Montero, he's not a player that I remember, but Emerson, Ibrahimovic, Alessandro Del Piero, Nedved, Camoranesi, I don't know him, but Zambrotta, Lilian Thuram, Ruben Oliveira, and Cannavaro. Okay. I mean, there are, you know, seven names there that would probably, you know, get into any side. Liverpool, no Gerrard. We've got Dudek Finnan. Hübbia is the captain on the night. Milan Baros, Yulnan Risa, Garcia, Xabi Alonso, Nunes, Jimmy Traore, Jamie Carragher, and good old Igor Biskan. It's an amazing, it's an absolute chasm, you know, between in terms of quality of man for man. But, you know, this is Benitez, the Czech player. He is the chess player. He plays them in exactly the right, as you say, that he gives them their specific roles. And they do that, you know. I remember Finnan being outstanding, going up on the right, really, but at no point jeopardizing ourselves defensively. It's almost like Finnan pushes forward. He gets up to the sort of the final third of the pitch, and then crosses the ball, but doesn't sort of press on any further. Benitez, as a manager, seemed capable and perfectly willing to take a draw. Do you think Klopp's capable or willing to take a draw?
I don't think he was for maybe the first year or so of his, you know, of his tenure. I think he was, looking back at last season, I think Klopp has to really look at himself, and I hope he has, in terms of, you know, running the players into the ground, which had such a detrimental impact on us when we hit January and February. And I do think you know, a lot of that is down to him. And people will say because we didn't have cover for Mane. I don't think that's the issue. Yes, Mane was such a, it was a big loss, but it was the level of fitness of the players. And I think that seriously impacted us and how we were progressing. I think if we look at the tail end, say the last 6 weeks of the season, he changed. And he changed his tactics. And not that he was necessarily looking to grind out a draw, but he was looking at, we don't need to go and win 3 and 4 nil. We just need to win. So that's what gives me hope that he can adapt. And, you know, look, I think the other thing is we've gotten very used to managers coming in, playing a certain system and not changing. Yeah. But that's, you know, we all change. We all adapt as our knowledge grows. And if a manager doesn't do that, doesn't adapt, well, then absolutely he needs to be got rid of. But, you know, you have to give a manager time to show that he can adapt. Now, whether he will or not, but I suppose, you know, look at the Hoffenheim match. He didn't come out all guns blazing. You know, we didn't try and really push from the front. It was very much about holding on. And, you know, I think he has so much trust in his attacking players that defensively he tried to be a bit more solid in how he played. And there was a couple of individual mistakes, but I thought they were up against a good footballing team who, you know, had a lot of one touch, very, very good passing in or in the middle. And, you know, I'm not saying that it was a master tactical performance by any stretch of the imagination. But what I'm saying is it was a very different way to how we played last season. I think he's probably feeling around. And if we look at, you know, those first few matches for Benitez in that season, we weren't playing good football. We weren't, you know, we weren't even looking overly strong defensively, but that built throughout the campaign. So I think a lot of Liverpool fans now will look at, you know, those first two matches that we've had and, you know, start going, oh my God, you know, we're not playing this unbelievable football, winning 3-4, 5-0. You know, we've gone away to a team this week who hadn't been beaten in a year and a half nearly at home. And we've beaten them at home and probably could have scored 3 or 4. Yes, they could have scored another couple as well. But I think we were winning that match. Mm. So, you know, maybe we need to wait and review the season as a whole, like we're doing when we're talking about Benitez in the 2004-2005 season.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Should Liverpool go out against Hoffenheim? I'm, you know, the end of the world as we know it, basically. but should that happen, the attitude, the horror that would go through the fan base, it would be astronomical. But as you say, looking back at the early days of Benitez, if Benitez had not got through against Graz, if we hadn't gone on to have that magical run, it's history. What has gone before us in the past? We lose all the emotion from that of what we experienced at the time. There were mutterings about Benitez's abilities early on with the performances in Europe. He wasn't doing well in the league either. I mean, mm-hmm. that's something that we all seem to go on to say these days, that, well, Benitez concentrated on the Champions League in the first season. He learned the ropes. Certainly, you know, he realizes that he needs a couple of enforcers. He needs Xabi Alonso to hit the ground running and be able to not get kicked off the park. And, you know, he goes on to later bring in Momo Sissoko and Crouch. So, I mean, Benitez is learning that. But we haven't seen as much, of course, of Klopp, you know, in Europe. I want to stay with the Istanbul season. But I'm not so interested in that final match itself, but I am interested in the Chelsea game, the one at Anfield, which people that were there, unfortunately I wasn't, but many people that I know who were there have said it was the most hostile, the classic Anfield 12th man. It was the biggest, strongest, most verbal 12th man ever in their experience. It was an amazing night. And just to sort of put things into context, if you look at the sides, Liverpool, we've got Dudek, Finnan, Hupia, Barros, Risa, Gerrard, Garcia, Haman, Traore, Carragher and Biscan again. against Cech, Makalili, Carvalho, Lampard, Cole, Gallas, Jeremy. I'd forgotten about him, actually. Didier Drogba, Gudjonsson, John Terry and Thiago. So, I mean, these were pretty evenly pitched sides. Chelsea, on paper, a much more expensive side. Because I do think that Mourinho is also a pragmatist too. How do you think Benitez compares against Mourinho as a tactician, knowing what we know about them with hindsight?
I think he's certainly, well, personally, and maybe this is just my red-tinted glass, and I would put him as far better than Mourinho, because if you look at Mourinho, he's had the ability to go and buy the best of the best. You know, people don't really think about that Chelsea side, and it had really been built, you know, by Ranieri. You know, the spine of that team had been built by Ranieri,
yeah,
when, because he was manager there when they got the money coming in, and he bought the best players in the league. So, you know, looking at that list, they're not, you know, the names are very good players, but at the time they were top class in terms of pushing for the leagues. You know, they were building, and that's not to take anything away from Mourinho. I think he is a fantastic defensive coach. But when he was up against it, you know, he could not outplay Benitez in the tactics department, because I think because he was more defensive-minded coach, when their backs were against the wall, even with the players that they had and Gudjonsson missing easy chances, you know, he could not break down that Liverpool team. And I think, you know, if we look at it, in my opinion, Stephen was one of our most underrated players in that season.
Absolutely.
You have Hoopia there, you have Carragher there, you have Risa there, and they are a good, solid lineup. But having Bishkan and Haman literally just breaking things up, and, you know, when at the time I remember watching Bishkan going, what does he actually bring? But when you look back, he was just there to break up the play. Mm. He was, you know, the Lucas at the time,
yeah.
But he wasn't doing it alone. I think that's the big difference. So people talk about that one player to break up all the play, but there are so few players that could actually do that. And if you look at the teams who've been successful having a defensive midfielder, they usually have somebody else there beside them who can do that role as well. So, you know, I suppose in more recent terms, people talk about Wanyama and Schneiderlin at Southampton, but there was two of them doing that job. So you had Haman and Bishkan there with Alonso,
yeah.
I'd lost him there. You know, not in that match, but, you know, he had a bit more of an attacking element. So, you know, Bishkan and Haman were the ones who would break up that play and allow him that space to spray the ball around and look fantastic and everything, you know?
What I like, I mean, of course, we get the goal, the infamous ghost goal. It was always a goal as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
Of course. Jose. Benitez is able to shut up shop, basically. Mm. Although I'm on the edge of my seat, hiding behind my cushion, you know, watching the match. Ultimately, I think once we're ahead, I think we're going through, because Benitez knows how to organize his side. He's obviously a big fan of Sacchi. In the final in the Europa League with Klopp, when we go one up, when Sturridge scores that absolutely wonderful goal, and then things turn sour. What frustrated me with Klopp, and I say this every time I seem to criticize or offer a nuanced view of Klopp, but I feel I have to say it, you know, I do feel he's the right manager for us. I'm a big fan of Jurgen Klopp, but my Achilles heel for Klopp is, I sometimes wonder if he turns to emotion, if he turns to the crowd, rather than thinking tactically. And there's that moment when he's turning to the crowd in the Europa Cup final and he's like, you know, get behind the side, you know, he's roaring at them to roar them on. Whereas Benitez would be looking at his sort of little piece of paper, quietly making notes, or, you know, at most he might stand and wave a hand, but, you know, nothing more. I do wonder, in those situations, when it comes to mentality, do we have to have a cool head to get us through to the next level? Do you have to remain calm? Or is this with Benitez, is it just an outwardly thing that he projects this aura of calmness?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a huge aspect is that he has the aura of calmness, and he looks like he's never phased at all. Even in, you know, adversity, he never looks phased. I think with Klopp and sometimes I feel that we all have, and I have it myself, this confirmation bias. So we look at, say, the Watford match and the substitution that he made, and they, you know, he can be rightly criticised for it. But by the same token, we're not turning around and looking at the Hoffenheim match, which was whatever many days later, and his substitution of Milner for Henderson. And Milner, in that position, helped shore up that midfield. They got through much less through the centre, where they had been coming through quite a bit. So, you know, should we be praising him and saying he's a, you know, a wonderful substitution mm-hmm. tactician for those type of things? So it's very difficult because we are emotionally attached. You know, we want our team to win. We want to see fantastic football. You know, we came away from Germany with a 2-1 win, and there's criticism. And sometimes I wonder, you know, have we lost the ability to enjoy football now?
Yeah.
Unless it is that swashbuckling, you know, us of the first 2-3 months of the season, where that never happens. There's never, ever been a team who went out and were unbelievably fantastic, entertaining every single match. Even that Arsenal team with the Invincibles, who, like, they had to grind out so many results because it's just, you cannot do it. So, and you'll hear Liverpool fans talk about, you know, oh, I'd be happy with, you know, a season of 1-0 wins. No, we wouldn't. we absolutely wouldn't. You know, we've played two competitive matches this season and we haven't lost.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, there is that absolute glorious ecstasy of the 4-0, the 5-1s, or, you know, you don't get that particularly under Benitez. I want to jump season, not the Champions League season of 5-6. It doesn't go so well. We get out of the group. We get beaten by Benfica. I want to go on to the next season, when in 2006-2007, we get all the way through to the final, where we've only got five players from the 2005 final that started. We enjoy more possession. We play better football, but the goals from Inzaghi give Milan their revenge, 2-1. Do you have any thoughts about the fact that Benitez is arguably playing with a better side second time around in the Champions League, plays better football, but it doesn't go right for us? Is it something, you know, is it just one of those things that Inzaghi is inspired, that they're better on the night? Or was it something that Benitez got wrong, that the side, although we say they played better, when you actually look at it on paper, they weren't as good as we thought? What do you have any recollections, any thoughts about that match?
Yeah, again, I think, you know, we look at Milan and they had... They had pretty much the same spine, certainly, of the team who we had beaten previous in 2004-2005. Arguably, we had a better team. I think the game was a lot more level-headed game. I think Milan took a more, I suppose, pragmatic approach to it, where, you know, once bitten, twice shy. So they certainly were going to that game with a view of, we're not going to let this happen again. And I suppose the emotional side of things, and I don't, like, we've glossed over the 2005 final, but, you know, it really was a perfect storm for Liverpool in some senses, where you had Milan coming off the back of the disappointment of missing out and winning the league, having the best team in the world, being 3-0 up, literally torn us apart in the first half, and then, you know, being shell-shocked. That was never going to happen again in 2007. I think, like I said, the game was a lot more even. I think we played really, really well. We were amazing in the final by any stretch of the imagination, but it was a much more even match. I just think they were a lot more clinical at the end of the day, and they were able to shut up shop. They were, you know, once they got those goals in front, the first goal in front, they closed it down. They literally closed it down. And you can see that in the team that they put out. It was far more defensive. You had Gattuso there, you had Seedorf there, you had Pirlo there, who were, you know, able to shut out that midfield. All of a sudden, we didn't have the room for Gerrard to be able to kind of do his heroics. And then you had, you know, defensively, they just were a lot more effective and efficient. So, you know, in some ways, the result in 2005 did us a disservice when it came to that final, where, you know, we were, I'd say, on a par, but the element of surprise was gone. And I think, you know, if we look at Liverpool at that stage, we were at the top table. We were one of those teams who deserved to be there. It was not a surprise for anybody seeing that team get to the Champions League final. Whereas if we were to, you know, transport ourselves to May of next year with the squad that we have, if we were to say, yes, they're going to be in the Champions League final, or back in 2004 saying this team's going to be winning the Champions League, we would be saying there is literally no chance in hell of it happening. But that season, it was a very, very efficient squad who knew Benitez's tactics and how to play it inside out. But the flip side is the rest of the world were very much aware of Benitez's tactics and what he could do. And I think I look at that season and say, and I suppose it's ideal world situation, but if we had Fernando Torres in that final, I think it would have been very different. I just don't think we had the attacking threat up front to win that final.
That's a good point. I also wondered, you've got Aga starting instead of Hubia. Daniel Aga, absolutely fantastic footballer. Jared's legs are 2 seasons older. Jermaine, I mean, he's come off an injury as well. Pennant, I don't really know what to say about Pennant other than I never really saw him as a Liverpool player. Dirk Kuyt and Mascherano were, for me, you know, standout players in that side. Jamie Carragher was really exposed for pace in that game. I really felt that was... I love Jamie Carragher. Absolutely huge, huge Jamie Carragher fan. But for me, that's one of the occasions where for all the heart, for all the nous, for all the fight... In terms of quality, he couldn't do it. He couldn't keep up with the speed of the Italian attack. Really, he was left wanting. And I think for me, I'm looking back here, but I remember at the time not being. I'm usually pretty distraught when Liverpool lose a massive match, but I don't remember being absolutely gutted. It was almost like the ecstasy of the turnaround 2 seasons before had, you know, nothing would get past that. And I got to the stage where I was so used to us doing so well in Europe that it was more a case of, well, you know, we'll be back. We've got Reina, we've got Gerrard, we've got Alonso, we've got Mascherano, we've got Carragher, we've got Daniel Aga, that this is a side with absolute European pedigree that I felt would go on and really, really perform. But it never happens. You know, we get knocked out in the quarterfinals against Chelsea, that infamous own goal, Yul Nanarisa, and, you know, out he goes from the club. Then we finish very, very poorly. I think is it that we're sort of finishing third in our group in 2009-10, that the glory days of Europe under Benitez fall further and further behind? Is that because of what was going on in the club, or do you see it that football tactically is beginning to change, that we're beginning to see more attacking-minded sides rather than the pragmatic, counter-attacking, strong defensive sides of Benitez?
I'd say it's probably a mixture of all of that, really. You know, there's a lot more money coming into football at that stage. You know, there's a lot more, as you say, attacking flair being brought on. And I think that's when we start to see the shift in defensive play to where we are now, where we have, in my opinion, we have very few defenders, you know, who are out and out defenders. They're nearly like adapted defensive midfielders. So, you know, a lot of the clubs want their centre halves to play the ball out, to, you know, carry it forward and be footballers. Whereas that wasn't so much the case. It was, you know, if you're a centre half in that Liverpool team, you give the ball to Alonso. You give the ball to Gerrard. You give the ball to Haman. You don't try and take on the midfield by yourself. So I think there was a definite shift in how football was being played. But I also feel that, you know, like I said, in my opinion, Benitez was a bit of a trailblazer in terms of using technology, using, you know, sports science to be more effective in, you know, how he used his players tactically, how he kept them fit, how he kept, you know, and I suppose he had his injuries as well. But, you know, moving forward, the rest of the world is doing the same. So all of a sudden, it's very difficult for him to rebuild himself or his way of playing to suit everybody else catching up, which I think is the same with Wenger, because by this stage, Benitez has a lot more control of the club. He's, you know, he's positioned himself so that, you know, he's overseeing the academy, he's overseeing all the coaching, pretty much everything from top to bottom, down to the employment of the tea ladies nearly.
Absolutely.
Which in some senses is really good. But at that stage, logically, what you would think is where he becomes a CEO then, or, you know, a director of football steps up and allows the next person who's been under his guidance and tutelage, but who has new ideas coming through. Is that's the ideal, but it doesn't happen in football management, unfortunately, that often. But they then come through and he takes on, it's like any business, you know what I mean? Managers move up to become, you know, senior managers, because they've built up a wealth of knowledge and experience that has helped to build the company. You know, they don't stay at the same level. So in my mind, that's what Benitez did. So he wasn't in a position necessarily to reinvigorate himself, to rebuild his tactical awareness. And he was getting caught up. And plus then you bring in the boardroom struggles, you know, behind the scenes, the club is still in a mess. You know, it's still lagging way behind everybody else. And even on the back of the success of 2005, the club is still miles behind and not exploiting the opportunities that they had to build the new stadium, to, you know, have the investment, to buy the best players in the world, which we should have. You know, we should have been buying the best players in the world, but we weren't. We were still, you know, in that fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth tier of teams in terms of our buying of players.
If you look at Benitez after Liverpool, I mean, he goes on and wins. He wins the UEFA with Chelsea. I remember watching it thinking they don't appreciate what they've got. I almost felt the commentators, the whole, of course, because, you know, I read a lot of the European press here in Scandinavia. There was never the same critique, or I'm gonna call it jingoism. There was a really horrible rhetoric around Benitez from the English media. It absolutely made me sick to my stomach at times. And looking at the way that it was portrayed in the English media, it was almost like, well, Chelsea have won it, and Benitez just happens to be there. The Chelsea players have done it. Here we see again a pragmatic manager able to take a side to negotiate tricky matches through Europe and collect a trophy. It's almost like, you know, Benitez is a winner in Europe. If we compare that to Klopp in Europe, have you followed how he did in Dortmund?
I not to the same extent as a lot of people. So.
No, of course.
But he hasn't. He's got to finals, but you know he hasn't won them, has he? So. But I do think, you know, had he won that Europa League final, he would have a bit more time like Benitez. So you know, the fact that Benitez then got us on to another final, you know, that gave him a lot of space to, I'm assuming, in the boardroom fight and say, look, here I am. I have us eating at the top table, getting us to finals in, you know, 2 out of 3 years. Give me X, Y, and a Z. And in fairness, you know, there was big investment the year they bought in Mascherano, you know, that kind of thing. So
absolutely.
I do think that had Klopp won the Europa League final, it's a massive bounce for him in his first season, which gives him a bit more space and a bit more room. And had he won that, coming into how we started last season, people are really buying into it. We hit the blip, and it's funny, you know, if you look back at our performances, you know, even before Klopp, January is generally not a good time for us. You know, we don't handle it very well for whatever reason. You know, maybe they should rename it a cold Tuesday evening in January in Liverpool. Because we generally don't do well for I'm sure, a number of reasons. But I think, you know, when you look at Benitez, I think you're hitting the nail on the head in terms of, you know, with Chelsea, he didn't get the kudos that he deserved, or anywhere else, really, you know. But I do think he left under a cloud. He left Liverpool under a cloud. And that was very much portrayed in the media as Benitez's fault. You know, even though people within the city and on the ground kind of knew that there was so much going on behind the scenes with the owners and stuff like that, They did a great campaign of putting it out that, you know, Benitez has too much control and he wants too much control and blah, 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 blah. So when he leaves, he's not leaving with the reputation of here was a fantastic, you know, manager who was able to build a team, take a team from, you know, poorish beginnings, and so to speak, and get them into the Champions League final. I think that stuck with him when he took over at Chelsea, especially following Mourinho at Inter Milan, you know, and the spats that himself and Mourinho had. I think he's the lesser for it based on the media rhetoric, because for Benitez, he was never one to play the media. You know, he very much was, I focus on the players, get them to play the way I want, and the media is just a distraction. Ultimately, Mourinho plays the media like it's his own little orchestra. And I think he did a massive disservice to Benitez, because Benitez wasn't getting dragged into that media circus. And it was great in 2005 when, you know, and I think 2007 as well, where, you know, he didn't get dragged into it and he won out. So what does Mourinho do? He attacks him when he follows him, you know, which makes me love Mourinho even more than I do.
I thought it was a really interesting point that you were making there about how with Benitez winning, it buys him a huge amount of respect. And then, of course, it carries on into the next seasons, you know, that we do so well in Europe. And you're absolutely spot on. The fact that Klopp doesn't win the Europa, and let's face it, it had become the Champions League really that season, because we beat United, we beat Dortmund, you know, it was just a fantastic tournament. I think there was more interest in that tournament, even here in the press, because of the teams that were involved. And because he doesn't win that, it does cast a slight shadow. Looking at what happens with Rodgers too, that we get into the Champions League, and for me, things really turn sour for Rodgers, not just because Suarez goes and we don't replace him, but it's the quality. It's the fact we go to Real Madrid and we basically play a B team, so it seems, that Rodgers, despite being a cavalier at so many times, he really completely doesn't get the Champions League right at all. And from that moment on, I think there's a perceivable change that very, very quickly the immense affection that had been built for him after that fantastic run very, 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 very quickly peters, you know, that it sort of peters out and things start to not be so well for him. Do you feel that, given the toxicity of our fan base, the desperation for us to win, to get back to the top table, that things, you know, there is an impatience in football. I think there's an impatience culturally, just by the way that our cultures have changed, have sped up, that we want things instantly. That if Liverpool stumble against Hoffenheim, if Liverpool stumble in the group stages, that if Klopp's Liverpool don't perform, that, you know, that this is really going to affect the club this season. I'm trying to explore the parallels between Benitez gets so much because of his astuteness in Europe, despite the players that he's got. Klopp's now spending, you know, he's spending some big money. We've just paid quite, you know, a lot for Salah. We haven't got the big signings that we've hoped for, I suppose. But what's your feeling about that? How important is a good European campaign to Jurgen Klopp's position as manager?
Yeah, I suppose it's one of those things. You know, I try to view the club with a bit of rationale, which doesn't always work. You know, and I do get kind of caught up, but after the fact, I try to take a bit of a kind of a more realistic view of where things are. I think, well, but unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people think like me in that respect. So, you know, if we are poor, or, you know, if we were to get knocked out next week, I think people would be calling for Klopp's head. Look, you know, on Saturday at halftime, there was tweets calling for Klopp's head, you know, so it's just unfortunate that with social media, there is instantaneous backlash to every little thing that happens on the pitch. Mm. So be it a tackle or a mistake from a defender, or, you know, poor play, somebody knocks the ball out of play by accident, misses a one-on-one, whatever it might be, there are thousands upon thousands of tweets about it, people reacting to it. I think that then influences a lot more than it should, you know, businesses which are football clubs. So, you know, I think that it's a very important season for Klopp. I think that it's going to be a very difficult season for Klopp, given that the squad that we need, and I'm not one for, you know, we need to spend 70, 80, 90 million. If we do, fantastic, you know, great, and we get a player who comes in and does a job, but that doesn't always buy you success. My worry is that the squad that we have at the moment is not sufficient to maintain a positive kind of momentum going forward, unless he does the thing like a lot of fans say, oh, just sack off the League Cup or sack off the FA Cup. But yet, when he does it, so if he decides, right, I am going to sack off these two cups, he will be absolutely crucified for it by those same people who will say, sack off these cups because we focus on the league and focus on the Champions League. If we do get into the group stages, I want to see us get a good hard group, and for the reason that I think that's where Klopp will excel. If we look at what he's done in the time that he's been with us, traditionally he doesn't do well against lesser opponents. He does exceptionally well against the better opponents. So give me Barcelona, give me Real Madrid, give me, you know, the Bayern Munich, the teams who are going to come and actually play football. That's where I think we'll see Klopp. Do I think we beat those teams? I don't know, but I think that's our best bet. I think if we go and we have, you know, lesser teams, we may struggle with it. So in some ways, I think he's on a hiding to nothing. I think, you know, people will say, like I say, sack off these cups, but yet we'll say we need to win a cup. We need to win something because we're Liverpool Football Club. We haven't won a cup in a long, long time, you know, Klopp to failure because he isn't winning cups, he's not winning leagues. But if you look at those around us, we're working in a very different position. Now, the owners are doing their best to build a club, and I truly believe that. I think they're trying to build a club. I just think they're making mistakes at very important junctures along the way. You know, and these people who will say the club are, or the owners are here just to make a quick buck, it's just ridiculous. You know, no business owners want the business to fail. They don't asset strip the football club. They're not, they the more success the club has, the better for them, because when they go to sell the club, it's worth a lot more. So, you know, these people complaining about the owners, you know, they need to take a realistic view. This is not a computer game. This is real life. This is a business. They need the club to be successful. I just think that they've made mistakes along the way, putting the wrong people in place. And we don't know if the current setup is going to work. It may be fantastic, but it might not work. You know, and I think that's something that weighs on Klopp then, because the failings around him, you know, are amplified on him. But I do think he has questions to answer. And, you know, like I believe, and I'm not in the know or anything, but from looking in, that Klopp was a major factor in us not having Van Dijk for the start of the season. You know, and we need to, you know, look at it in a critical eye, not an abusive eye, but a critical eye of, okay, don't make those silly little mistakes, you know. Let people go and do their job to go about things the right way, and you'll get the players. I just want to see him focus on the squad and getting it to be the best that it can be. I think it's an important season. He may well be gone come the end of this season, whether it's by himself or whether it's the owners get rid of him, unless he wins something major. I don't think, and that's in terms of the fans not being happy. I don't think the fans will accept second place. As much as they'll say it, I don't think they will.
Final question time, Alan. And of course, as it's my podcast, I can change the world completely and imagine it in any way. My question is this. Benitez's Istanbul side versus Klopp's side of today. Two managers, two sides, both with their absolute strengths, both with perceptible weaknesses. Does Benitez exploit the weakness of our current back four, or, well, back five if we're including Mignolet in the defence? Or does Klopp's attacking prowess with the three strikers, Firmino, with Salah, with Mané, who are you going to back? Is it the pragmatist Benitez getting the most out of his side, knowing how to exploit the weaknesses, or is it Klopp exploiting the weaknesses in Benitez's side?
I'm going to say it's a 3-3 draw with a penalty shootout win for Benitez. I think when we look at that team that won the Champions League that year, they weren't amazing. You know, there was no, like, attacking wise, they were not a patch on what we have at the moment. But the absolute reverse is true, where defensively our team now is not a patch on that team defensively, in terms of the setup, not necessarily the personnel, but the setup. I don't know, John. That's a really tough one. I do think it would be the odd goal would win it. But yeah, I'm going to go with 3-3 draw. Benitez wins on penalties, just like the Champions League final.
So thanks once again to Alan for coming on the show. If you'd like to connect with Alan on Twitter, and do so, he's at Alan, A-L-L-E-N, OD101 on Twitter. And I'm sure the Gags, when he tweets out the promos for the show, you'll find the link to Alan on Twitter. If you've got any comments or questions for me, do get in touch at John Buskell, J-O-N-B-U-S-C-A-L-L. If you've got any suggestions for the show, if there's something you'd really like to talk about, do reach out to me. Remember, you can subscribe to all the Anfield Index podcasts, including In Focus, over at anfieldindex.com. And if you do like the shows, please, please, please do share tweets, likes, shares, wherever you're active on social media with your network to get the message out about the Anfield Index network. So that's about it for this week. I do hope you enjoyed the show. I'll be back with another topic, another guest in focus very soon. Thanks for listening. Liverpool in Focus. One topic, one guest every week.
Podcast Network.